Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Psychotherapist Richard Hogan, good afternoon. Welcome back to the show. And today we're going to talk about the importance of setting boundaries in various relationships. Just while you're here, just briefly, you wrote an interesting piece yesterday that I suppose in a way explained a lot of the outpouring over the last few days about Sinead O'Connor. But you said that like her work had almost become part of our collective unconscious as as a people.
Yeah, and when someone dies that produces a piece of work that does become like a part of the collective unconscious, that's when you see that outpouring, because it brings us back in like almost like a Proustian Madeleine. It brings us back inside the skin of who we were, what we were, what we were feeling, what we were like at that particular time. I was 15 when I first heard Sinead's voice. And so it brings you back into contact with all of that early self. And I think that's what we're seeing, is that collective grief kind of.
Yeah, yeah. A bit like, not being glib about it, but remember Diana, they said
Absolutely.
People were crying for themselves.
Yeah, that's what it is. It brings you back in contact with yourself. That's what you're actually, the sadness of that part of your life or that loss. I think that's what it brings you back into contact with, always.
Yeah, interesting, yeah. Now, boundaries.
Yeah.
So we'll work our way up the generations maybe. Let's start with children.
Sure.
Kids need boundaries.
They do. It's like the art of saying no, Brendan. And I think parents from our generation struggle with it. I work with it clinically every day. I think parents have an erroneous belief that boundaries somehow makes you or positions you as a dictator, and so and makes you autocratic, and that maybe if your own childhood was a little bit, your relationship with your parents was a bit austere, that you decided, I'm not going to bring that into my parenting, and that might move you towards being your child's best friend, and then that really removes you as the agent of, like, you know, discipline and being that pillar of support for your child, because you decide, you know, I'm going to be this best friend, I'm going to have this incredible relationship with my child, and we all want a deep and meaningful relationship with our children, but we're not their best friends, because when we get positioned as best friend, we're on their side, you know, we're down with them, and we're not giving them any ramifications for their behaviours. And that's a huge problem for our generation of parents. We have the belief, oh, look, I'm going to really meet their needs, and I'm going to be that child, you know, that person that they can lean on for emotional support, and I'm going to be there to give them what they need. Well, it turns into what they want. And then all of a sudden you have an adolescence, an inverted hierarchy. You have a very difficult child who has come to expect that they can get what they want. And so it's a really important message for parents, because I think modern parents have a huge, I think it's so difficult for modern parents. They think they must be clinical psychologists now, and they must be psychotherapists and psychologists, and they have to work.
Yeah.
Two parents are working both jobs. And I think moms can feel really guilty because they see how their mother was and the time they had with them, and that positions them in a position of guilt and acquiesces in what the child wants, and you're giving in to everything the child wants. It's not a good position as a parent.
And a bit like Diana and crying for ourselves, we're actually fixing our
our own stuff. It's an endless pursuit, for sure.
That's a good thing to bear in mind. Fixing our own stuff. I think I'll stick
that up on
the wall.
Our childhood is always present in our parenting.
Okay.
So when we're saying, yes, you can have that, we're talking to ourselves.
Okay. And in terms of like, you might not get what you want, but you get what you need.
Yeah.
Kids might not think they want boundaries, but actually something underneath there craves them. They actually do crave them, do they?
Kids absolutely crave boundaries. And it's really important. Kids actually want boundaries. And I'd say to parents, let's say around technology, I'd say, you know, what's going on in the family? They'd say, well, he's gaming for 10 hours. And I'd say, do you want him to game for 10 hours? They'd say, no. And I'd say, well, what's getting in the way of that? And they'd say, well, John, right? And I'd say to John, do you want to game for 10 hours? And he'd generally say, no, I don't really want to be gaming all the time.
Stop me, somebody stop me
exactly. And so boundaries teach, but this is the crucial thing about boundaries, I think it's why it's such an important conversation, is that boundaries teach your children to critically evaluate things, because when they break a boundary, there's a ramification and a consequence for that breaking of the boundary.
Okay.
And so it helps them to critically evaluate, if I do this, this brings that into my life. And so think about when they're moving forward into adulthood, if I drink and swim, if I jump across from this balcony, if I drive the car like this, you know, you're teaching them that there's, for all your behaviours, there are consequences. And it's a really important message, because what any of us are trying to do, Brendan, with our children, is help them so that when they go off into the world, they make the right decision when we're not there. And what teaches them to make that right decision? Boundaries at a very early age. It's such a crucial part of all of our development that we learn or behaviours have consequence, and then it helps you to think, if I do that, that would bring this into my life. Do I want the consequences of all that in my life? No.
Okay, really, so this is more—it's more important than just in the moment.
Oh no,
it's like the difference between give a guy a fish,
yeah,
or give them a rod and teach them how to fish.
And
the
happiness, and happiness—a huge thing is happiness. Because if you give your child everything, through a chink too wide, there comes in no wonder, says Patrick Kavanagh. If you give your child everything, there's no wonder in their life. They have no joy. They have no feelings of excitement about anything. They're just endlessly unwrapping things. And so when you put boundaries in place, they understand that here's a few rules. Here's a couple of consequences to those rules. And then they start to critically think, well, no, I won't actually bring that into my life. And also, can I just say to parents, Brendan, a very important message for all parents out there, boundaries make good teenagers. You know that Robert Frost, you know, good fences make good neighbours.
Yeah, yeah.
Good boundaries make good teenagers. Because what you can have in the teenage world, and I always think, I don't know, do you ever watch The Sopranos?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Tony Soprano's daughter, Meadow Soprano, she trashes the grandmother's house, and there Tony and his wife are sitting down. I always think it's a good example of what goes on. He's the New Jersey mob boss, and he's thinking about how do we punish her. Mm. And he says to the wife, if she ever figures out we've no power, we're screwed. Right. And that's what boundaries teach your children, that you do have power,
okay,
and that you do have agency as a parent, and that you do have authority as a parent. And so when they move into adolescence, they can accept the rules a lot easier. And it's harder to roll back on the rules when you turn around and you see a 15-year-old who's saying, no, I'm not going to school, or no, I'm not doing this. You can get lost and slamming the door. It's harder to roll back then at that point. It's like bring it in early, make them consistent, make them doable. Key where they fall down, make them doable, and make the consequences and ramifications also fair, so they're not autocratic, they're not authoritative, they're not authoritarian, so it's not like chaos for the child, and you will have a really successful outcome as they move into adolescence and adulthood.
Okay, so a reasonable deal needs to be made.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, I have a very broad boundary that I would kind of do, which is, if you play ball, you'll have a good life.
Yeah.
If you don't play ball with me, you're just not going to have a good life, so make your choice there. So specifically, what kind of boundaries are we talking about with kids and teenagers?
Staples about what time you come in at. Say, well, depending on what age it is, you know, how you speak to each other. For me, that's a huge thing in my family.
Yeah.
How you speak to mom and dad, you know, is a huge thing. Because I see it clinically where the language gets used is very, you know, hard. And then you're slamming doors. And you just see the escalation of it when the boundary isn't right there. And so something I'd always hold as a parent personally is like, you know, you don't speak to us like that. We don't speak to you like that. And so you don't speak to us like that. Is that fair? You know, isn't that fair? And so I get my daughters to say, yeah, no, that's fair. And so you're just eradicating it out of the family life there. I don't slam a door when I get annoyed.
Okay.
You don't slam a door when you get annoyed, right? And that's a rule, that's a boundary. And if you break it, something gets taken away.
And this is all done in a very
calm
manner. So one thing you talk about is avoid hot cognition.
Absolutely.
That.
When you respond with hot cognition, you're emotionally led, and then you're saying, you don't ever talk to me, you go, and then all of a sudden you bring in like, that's it, you're not going out ever again, or you're never going to game again. And those rules can't actually be implemented. And so children realize then your words have no meaning. And so when you're calm, your child can also process the message, and you can deliver the message a lot clearer.
Okay. And you mentioned there earlier that parents have to be kind of as one
consistent
on this.
It is. Yeah. Oh God, Brendan, if you sat in my clinic, you'd see what inconsistent parenting does, and you'd see the diversity in approaches to parenting. And of course, it's complicated. We all come with our own story. We all come with ways we were parented. And so when we launch into this relationship, we've all ideas about how you should parent. But what you need to get really early on is a coherent message. Because kids can spot the difference, and they can spot who's more amenable and who's weaker, and they just divide you and they conquer the two of you. And so it's really important that if I disagree with how you're parenting, I don't say it to you in front of the kids. I'll say it to you afterwards and say, Brendan, I think you were too tough with him there. I mean, you know, why were you so strong with him on that point? And so that you're talking about your parenting together, not in front of the kids. It's crucial that you have the same rule. And what I would say for technology, because I know a lot of parents are struggling with technology, generally it would be like that dad sees the technology isn't such a problem, right? That dad doesn't think the technology, mom's a bit too strict on the old technology thing. And so there's a kind of an acquiesce. Dad's much easier to, dad gives me the internet code. Dad allows me on the technology there. And so there's a huge gap, and it just creates all sorts of chaos. Inconsistent parenting has a massively deleterious impact on a child's concept of himself or herself and the world and how to navigate it. So just get consistent, get more
coherent. And I presume that means as well that if there are consequences threatened, They have to follow through, even if it can be sometimes harder for the parent to decide. We need to go through with these consequences because it might have been an easier life.
Brendan, we've all been there, right? You're in the shop and your kid is driving you nuts, and they always do it by the cash register because they know that's the nuclear option. Everyone's around, and so they want something. Give me this, give me that. I want that bar, and you're kind of going no because your behaviour's so bad, and then you give in just to calm them down in front of the shop, right? And then when you're going back in the car, you're saying to them, "Well, you're not getting that chocolate now, or whatever it is." And when you get home, they're tormenting you again, and all you want to do is have a bit of peace, and so you give in on the consequence that you said at the shop, you're not getting this because of your behaviour. Then you give in, you've completely lost there in that scenario. Mm. At times you have to really hold that ground and have a hard no and be comfortable with your child's discomfort and just show them that your behaviour has consequences and mom and dad are serious about those consequences, and they don't move. I mean, they're not like autocratic, they don't crush your spirit, they move a little bit but they come back into place, they're there, they're firm, they're fair. But, you know, and mom and dad are not inconsistent in what they're saying.
Yeah, yeah. I'm reminded there of this thing I always think of. I remember a friend of mine saying to me when we had toddlers, never get in a battle of wills with a toddler because you've got 500 other things in your mind, right? The toddler only has one thing on his mind.
Exactly.
It's a bit like that with the kid as well. You want to get on with your life in other ways. You have to take some time with the... suck up the consequences yourself. Okay. You mentioned about not being their friend and everything. Mm. Tell me about enmeshment.
Yeah, enmeshment happens when the parent's identity and the child's identity kind of gets entangled. And I'd see it often working with maybe parents who have separated. And maybe one parent is the primary caregiver there, and there's one parent who's not so involved. And in that situation, and particularly if there's an only child, enmeshment can really kind of, you know, the child's identity can get really stuck in the parent's identity. They get dug into each other, and so the child really struggles to find their own identity, their own independence, their own agency. And it's really important if you notice that when you leave your child that they're very stressed, or that they're always wondering, and they want to know exactly when you're returning, or what time you're going to be here for, or the school says to you, you know, he's really anxious when you're not on time.
Okay.
You know, then there's a bit of enmeshment created there, and it's like you have to slowly, because that's the key thing, too much difference is too much for children, you have to slowly untangle that so the child begins to see, oh, actually I can manage myself, I can, you know, that's okay if mom or dad's late there, I can manage that, or, you know, I've got my own independence here. It's a crucial thing to develop.
Okay, now you mentioned there the teenage years. Someone texts here and says, boundaries are letting them make mistakes, which teaches them more. And I suppose you do, when you get into the teen years, I don't know if you've watched the second season of The Bear.
I've only actually started it last night.
Okay, so like it actually, it gets
stressful.
Better as it goes along. But you know your man, Uncle Jimmy, what's his name? That guy, Oliver Platt, who's fantastic,
right?
Sugar asks him in the car at one stage, if you had kids again,
What would you do?
Yeah. And he thinks about it and goes, I don't know. And then he says, I think I'd let them, maybe I wouldn't protect them so much. I'd let them maybe take more risks. And
I think that is such, and I always
fail more.
Oh, jeez. It's like, and I would reframe that. The failing is not failing. I think that's what we do to our kids in the education system. I think that's what we do to our kids as parents. We take away, we think of it as failing, and then failing becomes this incredibly negative thing, whereas that's actually your creativity. That's you launching out, giving something a shot and realizing actually that didn't work. Recalibrate, go again another way. And that's the crucial thing to give a kid. That's resilience. That's the roots, as I see it, as resilience, that you can launch out. And I'd always say to parents when giving this talk, I'd say, allow them to be spontaneous, but also allow them to make mistakes and understand that the adolescent world is all about reaching out there. You're trying to diminish the severity of those mistakes, obviously, but allow them to reach out there, allow them to make what we would call mistakes. What I would say is learning moments. And I'd reframe that from, that's a great learning moment. When they said to me, I didn't do so well there.
Okay.
I said, that's a learning moment. It's like Bill Gates, you know, success is a very poor educator. It's what you learn from your mistakes. That's what teaches you how to kind of move through the world.
So is the hardness of boundaries changing then into the teenage years? And we're kind
you always have to think about the boundary in relation to the person that's in the house with you. So it's going to be a different boundary when they're 20 and going to college as when they're 15 and running around the streets there and all whatever. So the boundaries will always shift to meet whatever the demands are for the particular age that your child is at. And obviously some of them are like, you know, just health and safety, what time you come home at, and, you know, what time you check in with us at, and who you stay with, and all of those kind of really important boundaries early on. Get them all in there, teach your child how to respond to them, and then the adolescent years, they'll push the boundaries, expect them to break the boundaries. That's the crucial crucial thing.
Okay.
I think that's what happened to parents, is that they expect them that they won't break the boundaries. And then, of course, they get a little bit hot cognition when the boundary is broken and it's all kind of chaotic then. It's like, expect them to break it. That's their job, to test the boundary. They're testing how firm the boundary is, or, you know, how safe the boundary is. And your job is to show them that, you know, the boundary is there. There's a consequence for that. And just navigate that better. And off you go, like you say yourself, meet this boundary and your life will fly there and you'll thrive away in this little system. Constantly break it, there's consequences, and makes your life a little bit worse there. And so they're learning to, my behaviour impacts on actually how I'm enjoying the world and all that.
Okay, so it's all very rational. Yeah,
yeah. Very.
Question here from Amanda. Boundaries so important. Had recent thing with my teen boy. He's now adhering to rules. Any advice for lone parenting widows? Very difficult when parenting two teens, 16 and 15, they gang up on you.
Yeah, no, that absolutely. And I'd often work with, whereas the other partner might be a lot more lenient to win them over, let's say, if there's been a conflict, a divorce, and gives them everything and buys them games, and then mom's at home trying to hold the ground there. And what I would say is, yeah, they're trying to divide and conquer you there. You never give up your agency as a parent. Your parental authority is such a crucial part. Your children are pushing you there, trying to see, are you firm? That's all they're doing there. You know, are these consequences firm? Is mom, now she's on her own here with this? Can we get around her here?
Okay, so they're sending out little probes.
They're sending out probes, absolutely. And you're showing them that it's fair and that mom isn't going to be pushed and that there are consequences, and even there's consequences for the both of you for the way you're behaving here now. And I would always communicate that very calmly when the situation is abated. I would sit down with both of them and I'd explain to them that, you know, what the situation is here and that you don't get away with that, and that when you push me like that, this is what actually comes in because of that behaviour. I mean, it's just, again, having nice firm boundaries that your children can understand, internalise and think, actually, mom's not a pushover here.
Okay, now, adult relationships. So, firstly, I'm thinking parents probably need boundaries from the kids as well. Do they like that? You know, these days, particularly, again, we become a parent. It's almost, that's your identity,
that's
now. And then you get away for a few hours and you realise, this is who we were. This is who we were as a couple.
Absolutely. And I would say that to parents all the time. And I say it to myself all the time because I can get caught just living this identity as a parent, you know.
Yeah.
It's really important that you reconnect with who you were and what you were about as a young fella or a young woman, and like meet your friends and go off for a weekend with your friend. That is such an important part of being a healthy individual, because it's burnout stuff when you're just too, then your identity is enmeshed in the children, and that's who you are, dad or, you know, mom.
We are all way too enmeshed in our children.
Our generation of parents are way too,
and they're going to be gone then. Yeah. Like, what are they going to do? Like,
and then you're thinking, who am I? I'm lost in the dance of this parenting thing. Who am I outside my children's identity? I mean, that's a crucial thing that we don't give up along on this journey, on this magical journey, let's be honest, but difficult journey, that we don't lose ourselves in it.
Yeah.
And that's about having a little boundary around that, you know.
And with the partner as well, do you need boundaries there? Do you remember?
You absolutely do. You
Which
absolutely.
Is a tricky one, like,
it's,
isn't
it? It's hard to navigate that, you know, at times for sure. But you absolutely do, because you're Brendan, you know, and I'm Richard, and we had an identity before you met your partner. And, you know, and it's really important to kind of stay in touch with that a little bit.
Okay. And, so this means putting things in place, does it? Like, make sure that you get out
for a walk,
without
each
other.
No, very simple boundaries. I'm going to go for a walk on my own. Whatever, I'm going to meet my friends and go for a weekend there with the friends and all of that. And what I always say to people when I'm talking to about this kind of element, I'd say a real healthy family, and more importantly, a really healthy marriage, right, and relationship, is that you're together, but that you're also separate. You know, that you're not just this one kind of malleable lump of identity, the whole family.
Yeah.
You're actually individuals.
Leaning on each other rather than meeting each other. Isn't
absolutely,
it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that you have your own identity too. You come together and you work through things together, of course, but that you have your separate identity and your separate time, you know, with your friends and in the world. And that's an important thing, to not lose that, because I meet this a lot. Parents really terrified of the kids leaving because they don't know what they'll be in their relationship after they go, and also who they are when they go.
And then as adults, our own extended family and in-laws and everything, that can be a...
We need a good boundary for those,
for
that crowd. Right? Because there's no doubt about it. Who you marry into, there'll be people who orbit your world there that you're not particularly too delighted with, and having a boundary is really important there, Brendan. And there'll be people in your family who probably say things to you to put you down, because depending where you come in the family system and what the dynamic of that family system was like when you were growing up, you get positioned a certain way. And so it's really important to have a boundary. We teach people how to interact with us, and we teach people what our boundaries are.
So how do you do that without being coming across too aggressive or coming across as defensive.
Yeah, no, that's a really good thing. What I'd always say is a real practical tip. Let's just say you're always putting me down in company and then I react with hot cognition. I'm like, you know, whatever. And you say, geez, relax, Richard. Just a joke.
Yeah.
I'm gone then, right? You've totally annexed me, right? And I'm defeated there. So all I'd say to people, when someone's like that and they're confrontational, but they're really passive aggressive there, because they don't want to say something too aggressive to you. They're trying to say something passively aggressive because they don't want to take responsibility for what they're saying. I'd always say, what's the joke there? Can you explain that to me? Now you've completely pushed that back on them. You're cold cognition and you're pushing it back on someone. And now they have to explain, okay, I'm stuck here. What is the joke? I'm saying Richard's not that bright or whatever it is. What is the joke here? And then they know. Then you're a little bit more formidable than I thought you were. Perhaps I won't say these things to Richard because he seems to call me out on it in a very cold and calm way. He doesn't seem to react with such hot cognition anymore. He seems actually, no, I'm not going to say any more stuff to him because actually illuminated something about me.
I can see, though, how that could come across as being quite aggressive. It could blow up a situation when you do it.
Once, but never again, you see.
Okay. Listen, we have a newish kind of phenomenon now.
Right.
I know people that live these multi-generational lives more years ago, but the whole thing now with grandparents doing a lot of kind of parenting in lots of ways, okay? So there's all kinds of boundary issues there. So can we talk first about the grandparents who maybe don't impose the same boundaries on the kids as you do, but at the same time, you're asking them to look after the kids all that.
But I get asked a lot about this and people write into me about it. That is a special relationship with grandparents, right?
Yeah.
That's a special. And if the boundaries are the same as the parents, I would say that's not really how a grandparent, that kind of relationship should be. Grandparents are meant to be a little bit like, you know, softer. Grandparents are a little bit, you know, they give them maybe a little more treats. I mean, that's a special. I know my kids, when they go down to the grandparents and that, they love that aspect of the grandparents, that they're not, you know, they're not their parents. And they don't have to think about those really, really concrete boundaries that help them to develop. They're there helping, you know, they're there supporting their children, but they're there to kind of have that special bond. So that's the first thing I would say. I wouldn't, it's an unrealistic expectation to think that your parents are going to parent your child for you. I think that's a special relationship. But again, what I would say is if you are parents that don't want your child to receive too much chocolate, let's say, because grandparents can spoil them, right? I would say that's an important boundary. And one I would always say to grandparents is they come up in a different generation and they might talk about body image a lot more than we do.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And they might comment on people's bodies more than we do. And it's something that, you know, I find we have to say, look, I have three daughters. I'd have to say, you know, we don't mention body image and we don't talk about people's weight and we don't talk about, you know, that those kind of ideas.
How does that go down?
It's met. Yeah, I suppose you're introducing
again, like it's a short term pain, probably, but for a long term gain, is it? People are going to find it difficult to address these things in the moment, but actually,
yeah,
you
because
reap the
it's
benefits,
a cultural thing. That wasn't a part of a previous culture. But we know, and I know, as a, you know, a psychotherapist, that you know when you comment on people's, it's an internalized prejudice. Children take that in, and it's an internalized thing, and then they think if I'm overweight or if I'm this or that, I won't be so valuable, and that's the seeds of all sorts of really negative.
I can one or two little comments.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And that's something I only kind of copped on before, you know, as a parent. It wasn't any theory I read. It was just like watching TV, thinking if I comment on this, and the child is sitting there, and they hear me making a disparaging comment about someone, how the hell are they internalizing that?
Okay.
And it's a really important thing. And also, you know, I mean, yeah, there's
loads. So never mind the grandparents. We all have to watch our.
We all have.
All of us have
to watch how we comment on other people.
There's a text here. I'm delighted you have an expert in re-spoiled brat children. I wasn't fully aware that's what we're talking about, but this is clearly a grandparent telling it like it is. I just can't deal with my feral grandkids. I think it's too late. No damage done.
Feral.
There are a lot of grandparents around the country who think their grandchildren are spoiled.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and they probably are.
Yeah,
let's be honest. And
we don't use the word spoiled so much anymore.
We don't.
Are they spoiled kids? Yeah, are we spoiling them? Yeah?
Brendan, yeah, I think our generation of parents have been really soft on a lot of things that kids need. I hear that message. I hear that message there. But it's never too late. These kids will be fantastic once a little few rules and boundaries come into their lives and they start to navigate and understand that there are consequences and ramifications to our behaviours. A child will turn around very quickly.
So you can unspoil.
You can unspoil a child very quickly there, yeah.
Listen, there is one other area that we'll touch on a bit before, but I think there's probably a whole conversation in this for another day. But in terms of boundaries with then people in our lives, not family, not kids, not your partner, right? And I suppose we've all collected up
friends.
People as life has gone on. And then sometimes you think, maybe I need some boundaries with this person.
You're absolutely right.
And tricky.
It's very tricky. And someone I'd always say to clients is like, you know, you tell a good friend by who do you ring when you've got good news? You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not bad news. Who do you ring when you got good news? Who's the first person you mind to ring? Because you know they're going to celebrate it with you, enjoy and have a bit of joy. I can see you thinking there, right?
Who are those
people? And then I can, you know, who's the person who takes it from me? You know, who's the person who kind of, one betters me on my story of like something good happened to me. Oh, that's nothing. And they tell you about something that brilliantly happened to them. I would say they're probably friends you need to think about and having a boundary around. And maybe also the friend who's waiting for your mouth to stop moving so that they can talk. Are they valuable? And it's good to have a little think about who in my life is actually supporting me and driving me on. Who am I supporting and driving on in my life? And it's really, if someone is a real negative naysayer and their only interaction with you in your life is negativity, and
you cutting them out? Like,
well, I would say, you know, this is such a short period in our lives. This life of ours is such a short thing.
Yeah.
I would be trying to surround myself with really positive people who have got my best interests at heart, who are supportive. And that's not being cold. It's like trying to figure out who do I want in my life? You know, who is a support in my life and having a boundary around, I don't want that person actually just is a bit vacuous. They suck me into their story. They don't have any interest in my life and they're just using me as a kind of a sponge to lash out all the stuff that's going on in their life. Well, is there value in that relationship? That's maybe something you need to think about as a boundary.
Yeah, yeah. But then, you know, people worry if you cut out all the unhealthy relationships in your life,
you might be left with the healthy ones.
Okay, yeah, you might be, yeah, yeah. But you know, people aren't perfect either.
No, right? Absolutely,
After a bit of give and take. Okay, that's all fascinating. Loads of texts. Here's a good one, right? We won't get into any more questions, but here's a good one. When the bedroom door is slammed, remove it from the hinges. Privilege removed. Now, the thing to remember there, of course, is that if you say that that's the rule, be prepared to remove the door from the hinges when it happens. Okay, Richard Hogan, psychotherapist, as always, thank you very much. We'll take a break. Email brendan@rte.ie.